James 3:14-16. But if you have any bitter envy and selfish ambition in your hearts, do not be boastful and false to the truth. Such wisdom does not come down from above, but is earthly, unspiritual, devilish. For where there is envy and selfish ambition, there will also be disorder and wickedness of every kind.
Greetings in the name of Christ this morning. As I was preparing this short homily for this morning on envy, and as I was preparing this week, and Mia started her church internship, I asked Mia, so what comes to your mind when you think of envy? And she responded very quickly, it's like a rotten apple. You don't always see it on the outside, but it just rots away at you. Man, we have a good church intern this summer. That was a very good visual for this morning. So if you can imagine a rotten apple right here, I didn't bring one along. But that's about the perfect understanding of envy this morning. We don't always see it because it's so easy to hide. Our envy. Envy has been called from the worship series leaders, the ulcer of the soul. In that all that envy does is take joy away and give only pain without pleasure. Envy is one of the seven deadly sins because it destroys what Jesus calls us to do and to be. And that is to love. Love God with all of our heart and love our neighbor as ourselves. And when envy is present and rotting away at our soul, it's really hard to follow Jesus' command to love. James Boyce, who is the professor of New Testament Luther Seminary, has some great commentary on the book of James. And I'm using a few of his thoughts here in this as we look at the small section of verses in James. James asks this question. Who is a wise person? You can have false wisdom and true wisdom. But for James, you can't talk about wisdom without talking about how that wisdom is embodied in one's life. It's practical. It's fruitful. It's what it, how you live out wisdom. James is very focused on the life of following Jesus' teachings. And because of his focus on that, Martin Luther, who was the head of the Protestant Reformation, actually thought James, the book could actually be thrown away maybe because it was so, in his mind, works-oriented. But I think James, I love it that James connects this idea of true wisdom and false wisdom with how that's embodied in one's life. And so James asks us this question this morning. What does true and false wisdom look like? For James, false wisdom is practical, like selfish ambition, envy, boastfulness. It's like something that's so easy to hide within us and yet so destructive to our soul. That's false wisdom. It's not wisdom from above. What does false wisdom of envy look like for us today? We live in the age of envy, and it's probably only increasing. Career envy, house envy, food envy, holiday envy. They celebrate the holidays. Wow, it's just so wonderful. I wish our family could do those traditions. Church envy. They have so many wonderful church programs. They have so many members. They have so many nice chairs and wonderful carpet. They have 10 youth programs and a program for the seniors and the middle age and the junior high and every age group in the middle. And what if we could only have some more of that? That's the perspective of the pastor or the leadership team sometimes. You name it. There is an envy for everything today. Human beings have always felt what Aristotle defined in the 4th century as the pain at the sight of another's good fortune, stirred by those who have what we ought to have. And I wonder if it's gotten even more challenging with the social media. Because now we have this opportunity that we didn't have 20 years ago, where people can put their best face forward on social media. And what do we do when we're often scrolling through? It's so easy to compare. Wow, they really have it well. I wish I could have it that well. In the past, people might have just envied their neighbors, but now we can compare ourselves right in front of us on a screen. Images can be filtered. People are presenting the best images of their life. And so we carry these envy within our hearts, and we can hide it really well, and that's probably why it's so dangerous. And it can tempt us. And like a rotten apple, it just keeps rotting away at our soul. And I think it's important that we recognize the context in America as well that we live in. We live with so much. And ironically, living with so much makes us want more and envy more. And so we need to be especially aware of that, Whitmer Heights and friends, how the sin of envy can so quickly creep in to our souls, even as we live with so much. This morning, we are invited to move towards the orienting love of God in Christ Jesus. How do we recognize the envy that can creep within us and move towards this posture of love and contentment and kindness? We do that through being reoriented in God's love, through spiritual practice and discipline, and through hearing stories of God at work in Tanzania, and through seeing stories of contentment that Don and Judy witnessed. But right back to James really quickly. James is very clear about one thing. One cannot move from false wisdom to true wisdom without being, as he says, the Spirit's indwelling presence in one's life. The ongoing grace of God that is at work in those who seek to be faithful. That is what James calls the wisdom from above. For James, you can't move from false wisdom to true wisdom without the work of the Spirit in one's life. And that's such good news for us this morning, because it means it's not just on our own power, friends. This movement from false wisdom to true wisdom is with the power of God's Spirit in our lives. The Spirit's indwelling work within us and the grace of God within us that orients us into the words of Jesus. Love the Lord your God with all your heart and love your neighbor as yourself. Let us this morning prepare ourselves for the reorienting work of God in our lives. Let us move towards God's wisdom from above. Amen.
We move into part 3. Newly oriented love for discipleship. This is where we hope to carry into our week thoughts toward love. Listen as I read 1 Corinthians 13:4-7. Love is patient. Love is kind. Love is not envious or boastful or arrogant or rude. It does not insist on its own way. It is not irritable or resentful. It does not rejoice in wrongdoing, but rejoices in the truth. It bears all things. It believes all things. Hopes all things. Endures all things. I invite Don and Judy forward to share with us on their time in Tanzania.
Good Good morning.
Good morning. Just to put you at ease, in Tanzania, if you didn't get done with your worship service in the first 3 hours, it could go another one.
But we will try to keep it fairly short. Do you want to explain how we got there in the first place? Like what? We're part of a group called Friends of MTCA, Mennonite Theological College of Eastern Africa. There are a lot of old retired missionaries, people who live there, but who want to walk with the Mennonite church there in Tanzania. It's called Kanisa La Mennonite, so we might use KMT, but it's the Mennonite church there. And our committee had sent funds over for certain projects that they had requested to have done. So we volunteered to go over and help to see these projects get accomplished, to be an encouragement. And so that's how we got there. And we had three goals. We wanted to get running water to the station, to the community, and to renovate the library for the college and the men's dormitory. Somebody had sent money for their library, and Friends of MTCA, and we raised other funds to help with this. This is John Wambura, the General Secretary of the Mennonite Church, and his wife, Takasa. And he was here.
He preached here one Sunday. That was his first sermon that he ever gave in English.
They live in Dar, but he periodically goes, Dar's on the coast, way up to Lake Victoria, to work at the college. He's also interim principal at the college right now. So we flew into Dar es Salaam. They met us. We stayed at their house for several days. And then we took a two-day car trip all the way up to Musoma.
Stopping at various churches and visiting various church leaders on the way.
Okay, I can look down there. That is the men's dormitory before. And that's one of the rooms inside. You can see the electric wiring hanging down. It was just one of the EMM people who had just been there said that was just utterly disgusting, this dormitory. Somebody should do something with it. That's the side entrance and the back. You'll see some changes. This is the library before.
And notice the dirty asbestos roof.
And the narrow windows and the louvers that are open letting bats come in. That was for ventilation, but it also enables bats to come in. So some of the windows were widened. The louvers were filled in. They used some of the broken out wall to fill in the louvers before they cemented over it.
That's filled in louvers in the middle framework. It's decorative and also provides security.
This is Lucia. She cooked for the students. Her daughter was our cook. Unfortunately, John Wambura told us that she went to Dar es Salaam for a wedding. Thursday she got sick and Friday morning she died. Her funeral's tomorrow. So please pray for them. This is women
getting water from the lake.
They would walk down to the lake and they would fill their 5-gallon drums and they would bring them back on their heads. So running water, you know, people had to go to the lake.
But you didn't hear anyone complaining.
No. This is one of the narrow windows starting to be broken out at the bottom on the one side of the library, and that's the wider window. It just lets in more ventilation and light. And this is what is going to be the computer lab. It has been tiled. It's been...
It was a latrine and shower room before.
Yes. And this is two of the students, Naima in the red and Keflin in the green and white. They would come up every morning to our house. We stayed in the house with John Wambura. We'll show you the house later. But they came up and out of the kindness of their heart swept the the sidewalk and the even the dirt, the leaves out of the dirt, without. I asked them. I said, "Do you get paid to do this?" No, they just did it out of the kindness of their heart.
We and got to practice their English on this too. Then
this is another mode of getting water by bicycle. Sometimes you would see five of those yellow drums on a bicycle. They go to the lake and they bring it back and they sell it. There's women walking down. You can see the library in the background. This is taken from our porch. Walking down to the lake and coming back carrying the water on their heads. This is John Wambora.
This was in the early stages when we were there. We thought water was going to be the easiest part of the project because it had been funded, and we were working in cooperation with the local government. Everything was planned out. We were going to have water in 3 or 4 days. We got word this week that water is flowing.
And this is when we found out that we had to put the pump farther out into the lake, 90 meters further, and it was going to cost more money. And you came forward and sent money for that project. So you were very influential in getting this water project going. These are the divers who had to go out in the lake, no equipment, and they would dive down to
set the pump.
Can you imagine? There they go. This is how we got water. The young man in the hoodie was in the red in the back there is James. And he has a business of selling water, and he brought this water to our house several times a week. And we asked John later on, how much does it cost for you to get water here? And he says, nothing. That's my nephew, and he won't charge me. Kindness, contentment, you know. Well, you've seen this outfit. It was actually, this was the Christian Council of Tanzania, the women of the CCT, who were going to hold an all-day conference, and they invited us to come. They had already chosen a material that they were all going to use, I think, as a sign of unity. Because they were Mennonite, they were Lutheran, they were, you know, all the Christian
Anglican, Catholic
churches in the area. And you can see how individualistically they used the material. But it was a beautiful day of celebration, and they had the parable of the great banquet, Luke 14:15-24, that they acted out. And lots of choirs and singing and dancing. It was just a joyous day. That's when water first came to the tank at the end of the library. You can see how people come with their buckets, and the first water was dirty because it had come through the pipes that hadn't been used in a long time, but they were still glad for water. We saw people going to small puddles and getting water that you know wasn't clean. That's the house we stayed in, an old missionary house. I don't think you can see it too well, but there's two blue chairs on the porch, and we'll talk about them in a minute. Whoops. This is Gideon, the contractor.
And his wife.
And his wife, Sephrosa. John Wambora was very proactive, and before we even got there, he had a contractor lined up. He had so many things in place. We would not have been able to accomplish a whole lot if it would have been just us. But between God having everything and John and his foresight and Gideon and his excellence as a contractor.
And he was proactive. Working with government was reactive. You know, you saw a problem and you say repair it. Like, the tanks obviously weren't going to hold water. They needed to be repaired. But how do you know it leaks before you see it? So once you see leakage, then you drain it and repair it.
And Sephrosa is a seamstress, and she made some clothes for our grandchildren. But There you we're sitting on the porch.
It's one blue chair. And that was one of the first things we bought was chairs. Bishop Kisadi said it was important to sit outside on chairs. And then it makes you more, well, you feel the breeze and it also makes you more
acceptable,
available to people. People would greet us and we made tremendous relationships just because we simply sat down on chairs.
Not all the time, but in our free time.
And
This is the women's dormitory. That's another project, hopefully somehow in the future. It also needs renovation. That's the tank you saw before. The second time they filled it with water, it exploded.
It had been dry, and so rather than filling it gradually, they wanted to fill it, and they were about ready to stop, and then Bunyata, our driver, said, "No, we want it. To water to run out so Zaydan can see it."
Thankfully, no one was injured seriously. There were some bruises and stuff, but that cement went flying.
So that was a severe disappointment.
Yeah, very. So then Sunday morning, John had the sermon, and he challenged the community to come together and to start digging a trench for pipes to go up to the tank at the top of the hill. And he promised a goat for a feast for all who would come out and help with this work. And women and men came. And they finished the job, and there was the feast of goat and rice. And also other church people were bringing uji and things to keep people hydrated because it was hot.
Uji, cream of wheat type thing, a porridge for sustenance.
And we treated a lot of blisters that day. This is a little
rural church, and, you know, we have trouble sitting on these chairs sometimes. Imagine sitting on that for 3 hours.
Dirt floor, hand-hewn benches. They use sheets to decorate like butterflies, but that church got full. It was very full. I took these pictures before because we were there early, obviously. This is Rhoda Karaney, a friend from, there was maybe five people still living who we got to know in the early 1970s when we got married there. She and her family, her husband and children lived there, and we became good friends, so she had us out. We went to visit her.
And she went, we had tea and flatbread, and then she was wanted to prepare a meal, and I said, "No, we came here to visit. We didn't come to eat."
Because if you cook the meal, we won't get to visit with you.
And working at Country Gift and Thrift and White Horse, we throw a lot of things away. And particularly soccer shoes. You can't resell them. So I asked Helen, who sorts the shoes, put them in a box, and I'll take them to Tanzania. So I took a suitcase full of soccer shoes, and boy, were they happy. And this is one of another friend from the 70s. This is Marco Kisagiro, and he lived out near the Serengeti, and it was always nice to arrange church conferences out there. That way you could go and hunt and see animals. And then his son beside me is Isaiah. He's studying at the Kisadi Technical School in Shirati to be an electrician.
And that's his mother, Dorcas.
His mother, Dorca.
And we always had chapatis every morning for breakfast. Bunyata's wife would make chapatis and send them up for breakfast, which is a flatbread. I had had one for breakfast. We got there at noon, and I thought we'd soon be eating, but it was 5 o'clock till we ate because they killed a sheep for us. And so they butchered it, they cooked it, they prepared it, and we had a feast.
It's a process.
That's really a gift of honor.
Yeah, and these are little children that went to school in the morning, and then when they came back, they would always come to greet us and say hi and bye, and they wanted to shake our hands. And their teacher was discouraging them one day from doing it. And I said, no, they're happy to greet us. And so then she had them sing a song. And then a day or two later, she said, they are so happy to come here because they're coming to America. Like, they see these white people and it's America.
That's their teacher behind them, Agnes Paiusi. She also had been there in the early days when we were. Her husband had been a driver for the bishop.
And that's the blue chairs where we sat.
This is Gaspar, one of the students. We found that they would, several of the students would just come up and sit down and talk to us, sometimes for a long time.
And they weren't asking for money. And which oftentimes in this setting, people, because you're white, European, you have tons of money, so you ask. Even though you might not receive, it's okay to ask. But these students didn't do that. And very few people did. They saw what we were doing, and it sort of took the pressure off.
And the house beyond there is the house that Musa Marwa lived in. He's also a church leader. And he stopped and talked to us many times. And Don and he had lots of conversations. And one thing he said to him one time was,
I admire you for staying in that house. And I said, why? He said, what doesn't have running water? It's like our houses. And I said, if I was a hotel in town, you wouldn't have stopped and talked to me.
And he said, yes, you're right. He said, if we lived in a hotel in town, we wouldn't be sitting here, and you wouldn't have come up and talked to us. And we found that those chairs just really opened up many, many conversations and relationships. This is Rhoda Mtoka, another friend from back then. She and her husband, Daniel, had been at EMC when I was. And then they also lived on the station when we did. She's a widow. That is now the library from the back with the wider windows.
The roof, you'll notice, is painted. I'd ask, can asbestos be sealed? Like at Sharati Hospital, they're trying to remove as much as the old asbestos roofs. It was very economical to use, and the missionaries used a lot of it. Now asbestos has issues. And I asked Gideon, couldn't we seal this? And he said, no. Then a couple days later, he showed up and said, yes, I found a sealant. So they brushed the roof and put two coats of sealant on. It's for asbestos. It's much less expensive. So we'll see if it works.
And that's the library from the bank, back. And, of course, the tank is no longer there. But it just really opened up. This is the men's dormitory from the back. When you saw the side picture, there was no extended building on there. They added this structure to
for a shower and latrines.
And it's only accessible from the inside. And the new windows... That's from the front. That is the chapel. There's some broken windows, but that could be repaired. But
that's where we had our feast after our wedding was in that chapel. Reception, whatever you call it.
Wait. Okay, this is Naaman Keflin again. We really became close with them because every morning they'd come up and talk, and we just really grew to love them. This is Rebecca, our cook, whose mother was just killed, and her baby, Lucia, who was named for her grandmother. They all lived together in a little mud brick house. The community is just devastated with this loss. So our hearts go out to them. And that's John Wambora and Rhoda Mtoka, my friend from EMC, her daughter, Nyangi, who teaches at the college and is also taking over some leadership there.
That's the secretary's cubicle in the
librarian.
The librarian, and with the metal on the window for security. That's the computer lab. New chairs and benches, that's inside the men's dorm. The new beds, the tiled floor. And I told the boys, I said, you're here on a trial basis. If you don't keep this place clean, we're going to let the girls have it, and you go stay in the girls' dormitory.
He said, don't worry, we'll keep it clean. That's Lena, the librarian in front of the new bookshelves in the library. And that's the study area. Those wide windows just made a huge difference. So on the one side is all those cubicles with tables and chairs. On the other side is the bookshelves and the books. And
that's our driver, Bunyata. We
became
very good friends.
Yes. He told us after the last Sunday we were at church, he wasn't there, and he said to Don, I couldn't come to church because I was afraid I was going to cry. And this is a picture John Wambora sent the middle of the week after we had just come home. That's the tank at the top of the hill that we knew was going to leak, but at least water was coming there and people were getting some water. We've learned that since then they have repaired that tank and water is going there. This was taken the last day of the semester after the last chapel.
Theological College.
Yeah. John had asked Don and me to share a little bit at the end of the chapel, and so Don shared in Swahili, and I knew I had to use English, and so a student was going to interpret for me, but I didn't get very far before I got very emotional. And then John started singing a Swahili song from the Tenzi Zawahoni, which is their Mennonite hymnal. And the students just all joined in and gave me time to compose myself. And then we just had grown to love them so much. And then at the end, they gathered around us, and we all sang, God be with you till we meet again, in Swahili. And they can sing. And it just was such a holy moment. So then they wanted to take a group picture. And that's it. So some things. I think I covered. We were invited to many, many homes. I mean, they're so generous, even though they don't have very much. To them, relationships are the most important. And we were so blessed by that time there. We were able to free John up because we lived in the house with him, so we were able to take care of some of the details that so he could be free to do his work, and an encouragement to him. And he was an encouragement to us, too. We really appreciate it. He calls us his parents.
And the last Sunday in church after say sometimes take several offerings. And after we were done greeting everyone afterwards, Pastor Musa said, just wait a little. And he gave us a little wad of money. They took an offering for water.
So that we would have money for water for our long bus trip from Masoma.
It's about $5.
Our 15-hour bus trip. But it was in small bills and coins, and you knew they dug deep. You know, it was just very touching. Thank you.